This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
What we have are three types of water. One of them is ordinary drinking water, ordinary Canberra drinking water, and the other two sorts of water are recharged, recycled storm water, which is commercially available. I'm not sure if you can get it everywhere in Canberra right now, but no, you can't. Okay, where is it available?
It's not commercially available. It's from work that's been done. It's about to go into the potable water system in Adelaide, so they produce it as for people to be able to see.
Apologies. It's not commercially available yet. I was misinformed before.
It's probably fair to say there's debate about that. But
right, okay. And the other sort of water that we have is fresh from the ocean, it's called, which sounds great. It's desalinated water. A taste of desalinated water, which always makes it sound very nice, produced by the Perth Seawater Desalination Plant. Now, desalination, of course, is nothing new. However, desalinated water is not something that we, at least, that we consider that we drink all that much. Is desalination desalinated water drunk very much?
In Perth, it's quite a large proportion of south of Perth, and I think it's 30% of the Gold Coast is now fed by the desalinated water, I think. It provides
Sydney too.
And Sydney too is now online, is it? Okay, I wasn't aware that Sydney was already online.
Okay, right. So what we have are these three types of water, and our panelists are all going to have a taste. Well, they don't know which.
No, actually, I might say I worry about the. I'm not actually. I'm going to drink water. So.
Okay. Right. Fair enough.
Well, the only reason, not that any of this is derived from sewage, but one of the problems with stormwater. There is an argument that that has got the same problems potentially as sewage. So, in that it can have a lot of chemicals and stuff in there. So, I worry about that, particularly because this particular one from South Australia didn't even go through reverse osmosis. It actually just goes through wetlands and I think some basic filtration, but it doesn't go through reverse osmosis.
No, actually, it goes through a wetland and then it goes for 180 days through an aquifer. So it's not basic filtration, it's actually through an aquifer. So I must admit, I'm part of that project that does this. That's why I know so much about it.
No, but what it hasn't gone through is a reverse osmosis membrane.
No, but they did test a lot of what the chemicals were going in, extensive amount, and then testing the water as it comes out. Chemicals are a bit different from pathogens. They're a bit easier to tell because you can concentrate water down and it's spread ubiquitously. One of the problems with pathogens, as Peter alluded to, is that they're very randomly distributed, so you're very easy to miss them, which is one of the problems we have with pathogens. Whereas chemicals, it is easier, but it could be, but chemicals could be there below detection limits, but this is very, very low detection limits that they have for them. So.
Yeah, the trouble is pathogens come through with surges much more than chemicals.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Well, look, before we continue with the rebuttal, I'm glad to see it's already started, and it seems like it's not on the verge of finishing just yet. But Dr. Collignon is having just the regular water that was provided, as is always provided by speakers at such events, or for speakers at such events. Now, Professor Collignon, if I could be your proxy, perhaps, because I've got some water in front of me, and I'd like to have a go and see if I can really taste the difference as someone who knows nothing about this particular subject or most other subjects. But now I'm sure that Dr. Toews would be interested in having a go. And Dr. Fielding?
No, I'm fine.
You're fine? Okay. Right. So
that small amount of water.
Right.
I doubt.
Okay. Right. Well, we'll try.
As our participants in our research kept saying to us, all those cows in the dam, surely this recycled water can't be any worse than the stuff we're drinking now.
Okay.
I might say I think that's a real issue, and that's actually why the catchment has to be improved all the time. Yeah. I think the argument we allow cows in the dams means the cows ought to get out of the dams. Yeah. And a lot of our water supplies have been interfered with because of developments and housing developments, a whole lot of stuff that should never have occurred and is being made for political expediency. So, I actually think the argument is improve your catchment area. Like, there's big cattle yards and cattle feedlots in the Brisbane catchment area. To me, they should be closed and moved out of the catchment. It depends how big it is.
Excuse me, members of the audience, if they wish to participate, if we could do that in the question and answer session a bit later. But yeah, I'm sure that a lot of people have some really good stuff to say, and I'm actually really interested in hearing it. But I'm also interested in having a drink of water or three. So if we could go through, first of all, participants, if they want to try the sample A. Does it taste sort of fresh and pure to you?
I think I know which one it is.
Oh, I was afraid that might happen.
But I might be wrong. I'll taste the others before I'll reserve my judgment until I've tasted the other one.
Okay, right. Well, we'll try number. We'll try. Dr. Fielding, what did you think about A, first of all?
You know, I'm one of these people who can go to any city anywhere in Australia or the world and kind of go, tastes like water to me.
Okay. You've never been to Adelaide, I guess.
I'm sure I'm not the best judge. I have been to Adelaide.
Oh, right.
Even in Adelaide, I thought, tastes like water to me.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Now, sorry, we'll go on to B.
It's almost like wine tasting, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, a bit like wine tasting.
Except you don't spit it out.
Yeah, Pat, I'd rather we. Yeah, we better not spit it out.
Wine, you're
apparently. Oh, okay. If Professor Collignon was here, maybe we would be spitting it out. But he's just having his the regular water. Okay, now we'll try C and see if we can.
All right, I'm going to have to reserve my judgment there because.
Okay. Well, of course. Neither of the doctors here, or should I say the scientists here, are too familiar with Canberra water, of course, Canberra tap water. I knew exactly which of those was Canberra tap water, partly because I'm from Canberra and partly because I knew the answers anyway. But now what would you'd like to reserve your judgment?
Yeah, well, as I've mentioned, I've been part of Recharge, the project, doing this, and I've drunk a number of these, and we give them out at conferences, and they're cold, so often when you've got to go somewhere and you're really thirsty, you grab one. Well, I'm sort of being there on the counter, and so I thought I was familiar with the taste, but no, I'm not that familiar anymore.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you didn't think that it was, but you seem to recognise A.
Well, yes, but they all taste like A.
They all taste. I got to say,
I think B tastes different from A and C.
I think they all taste quite different myself. So
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
I've got
A and C tasted a little bit the same.
Right. Well, I've got a particularly sophisticated palate myself.
and I don't.
No, there is a different taste. You're right. There is a different taste to them, but I'm struggling. As I said, having had some of these, I'm struggling to pick out which one it is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
A bit like wine.
It is. Yes, it happens too much. I've drunk too much of it. That's a problem.
Okay, well, are you willing? Would you like to know which is which?
I'm going to guess that.
No, okay, yes, please.
I'm
going to
guess that C is the reclaim and that A is the desal. But I could be hideously wrong there, so I'm going out on a limb. I don't know whether you want to try anything different.
I have no idea. I like the taste of B best.
You like the taste of B best. Okay.
That's the most I can say.
That's very interesting. Okay. So, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead and make me look like a fool.
No, that's fine. This is only going to be on radio, so no one's going to look like more of a fool than I am, because I'll probably still get it wrong. I can still get things wrong even if I know the answer. So, but, okay, let me just say that B was Recharge.
Wow.
Recycled stormwater.
The storm.
A was Canberra drinking water.
I've got it completely wrong.
Okay, and C, of course, was a taste of desalinated water. So, did they all seem perfectly okay to drink? Obviously, I mean, the palate is not really the way to decide these things, of course.
The way I seem to remember Recharge was one of the things it had in it was a slightly higher level of iron that it was picking up in the aquifer. And this is, South Australians drink groundwater from the aquifer, and it does have a slightly higher iron taste, which so does Perth for that matter. So I thought I was picking, I recognised it from the iron, but I haven't been able to pick it up at all. So maybe I'd have to drink a lot more to pick up that subtle iron taste than I was drinking out of the small amount. That's where I was coming from.
I can, yeah, it definitely tastes very different. B definitely tastes unusual for me, yes.
I think it tastes good.
No, okay. But I thought it was A, because A was very different for me from the other two. So maybe I'm just used to the others. So,
right, yeah. That's possibly what it is. Well, of course, I'm quite used to A, yes.
Yes.
Okay. So you still don't want to have a go? We haven't tempted you yet?
One of the things I think with tasting is that tasting is the worst of our tests to tell you whether a water is good or not.
Of course.
You get probably some idea, because if there's a lot more organic material in it, it probably looks and tastes a bit different. And that probably does mean there's an increased chance of having some problems. But that's actually why you need testing, because by looking at it and tasting it, you can't, I think, tell whether it's safe or not, is the problem.
You can't tell whether it's safe, but it's often a kind of cue for people to complain about water, isn't it?
Mind you, I think actually, probably with some justification, it is a lot more organic material sometimes.
But the organics often, one of the things we did very, very early on before we got to Reclaim was looking at water for irrigation, and we're looking at the organics coming through, just doing total organics, and they have these lovely things where they can look at the spectra. So you don't know what's there, but you can see these, they run them through the NMR, the nuclear magnetic resonance. And what they found was that all the stuff that was coming through with the wastewater, mind you, this, like I said, was being used for irrigation of crops, but what they found was that there's a residual of organics that is naturally in water, and they're called humics and the likes. And if you go to where there's tea tree swamps, that's the colour that you get with the that tea tree colour. That stuff is perfectly normal. It passes straight through us. So it's not necessarily... You've got to be very careful to say that there's a problem because of taste or colour
I'm just agreeing. I think tasting is one of the less sensitive tests.
But to say that if you can taste it is means that there's an issue is going to be very careful, particularly in Australian waters, which can be very high in tannins. The tea tree swamps that we get because of the eucalyptus.
The only disadvantage, I suppose, if you have more organic material, the chlorine doesn't work.
The chlorine does, and that is
a big problem.
That's a problem for drinking water treatment plants worldwide, for that matter. Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Fielding, you seem to be... It's interesting, it makes sense that you're in the middle here, I've got to say. Now, you were very diplomatic.
It's a bit like a tennis match, I think.
Yeah. So, okay, well, who wants to be a tennis net? Basically, you were very diplomatic in your talk, which was mainly, of course, about public acceptance.
Yeah.
Now, may I ask, where do you sway?
I knew that someone was going to ask me this, actually. I mean, I don't think I was diplomatic. I think what I was doing was speaking about what I know about. And I'm not a microbiologist and I'm not a medical researcher, so I don't really, you know, like most people, when people start talking about log 10s, you know, I kind of go, what does that mean again? And I think it's actually really interesting. I watch my own kind of thought processes, because I find myself in many of these sorts of situations where I'm hearing one person get up and say, you know, I think it's perfectly safe, blah, 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 blah. And then another situation, someone going, no, I think it's really high risk. And so I notice myself kind of going, yes, of course it's safe. Oh, maybe it's not. Yes, of course it's safe. Oh, maybe
Which
it's
is
not. I think I probably lean toward the idea that, you know, if it was something, you know, that was decided to be done, that we wouldn't, you know, it's a trust issue, I think. That, you know, that I don't think we would decide to do something like that unless we were pretty sure that it was a safe thing for people. And so I probably lean a bit towards thinking it's fine, being a supporter.
Okay, right.
Sort of one of those people sitting on the fence to support it.
Sitting on the fence to
just lean slightly.
Right.
Anyone who I've just heard speak.
Depending. Okay. Well,
no, I think I'm a supporter.
Right, okay, now...
But I can understand what people's concerns are.
Sure.
And I don't know. I don't know whether it's safe or not. So I'm not an expert. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense, someone not being an expert. I know how that feels. Now, Dr. Tozer, Professor Collignon did mention that there's always a problem with human error.
Mm.
Now, I mean, you'd agree with that?
Human error problem is, because like I said, I what I've tried to show you is just from where we are, the research, and I'll just step back for a bit to feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to be a supporter because I've done so much work and I see how it is in comparison with what we've got at the moment. And I can see from my own point of view that there's no difference which way we go. In fact, to a certain extent, I sort of worry about putting it back in the reservoir, particularly in places like Brisbane, where I go out on a weekly basis on the reservoir and I see cows sitting in the catchment, which I agree we should be taking away. And I've argued this with SEQ Water, and it's a purely political point of view with High Court judges and stuff owning farms, and I'm not going there, which is a big problem. But that is one of the big issues that has to be looked at. And I will say, when I said that there's more research to be done, as I indicated from a biophysical researcher, we're filling the small holes in the knowledge. Whether I can say, whether people accept it or not is not my job. My job is just if you ask a question, I can say, yes, we know that, or no, we don't, or what we do know about it. The side of getting people to communicate between the different treatment plans to make sure that it's switched on, and the fluoride incident actually showed that that is still an issue, is something that is my main worry about that. But for that point of view, this is not something that is just for recycled water. We've had the same sort of problem for drinking water themselves. In fact, the problem that occurred with the cryptosporidium outbreak that was mentioned by Professor Collingon was actually a human error, where they weren't washing their sand filters properly. It's the same sort of thing again. Most of the problems we have in any of our water treatment systems, the vast majority of it may be a system breakdown, but the system breaks down because of human error. And that's not a failure of indirect potable, it's not a failure of wastewater treatment, it's not a failure of drinking water treatment, but it's something that they have to come to grips with. And there's a gathering pace of research on how to try and do that because of that problem.
See, that's one of the philosophical problems I have with this, that I think the vast majority of days it'll work probably fine. But you get human error, and the real trouble is because we don't have real-time testing that can detect down the level of extraction, you won't necessarily even know there'd been a problem, or you'll know it only after the stuff is...
But like I said, this has existed in drinking water as well.
Yeah, no, but the
and that's where we've had all the major outbreaks.
I have no argument we need to do it better and change the behaviour, but... The difference here is that the water being used as a source has probably got a million times more drugs and viruses in it than those systems. So you actually have to have a million times better protection in place. Otherwise, your risk has gone up.
Well, and I'm going to step in because that's the one criticism I'm going to say of your presentation is that you relied purely on the reverse osmosis, and you're right with the level of log reduction. Yes, you're right with the fact that we can't detect how much viruses is removed, but there are actually, as I pointed out, seven barriers in the system, and even any time that there's a breakdown, it the most we've ever seen at any time is one barrier breakdown, and that's where the redundancy is, the way it's all built up, is that we can guarantee that even if we don't, if one, say a reverse osmosis membrane breaks, and say we, instead of getting six log reduction, four, I'll actually step back. They say in the guidelines it's six, but I actually believe it should be four. And there are other people who agree with me. That's engineers versus scientists. Engineers think it's six because they like pumps and valves. So if we lose 50% ability, because even if they break, they only, to be not picked up, they're only breaking small amounts. A major break would be picked up immediately by the system and it would shut down and they divert it. They can divert because there's holding tanks for a day and they can divert. They've got a day's grace if a major event breaks down. So say we lose 50%. Now, we know that already from the research that we've done that the wastewater treatment plants are taking out two log. We're talking about log, so that's 99%. We know that the microfilters are at least removing three, so there's five. We know that the advanced oxidation actually is rated to five. There's another one. We know that the reservoirs, if you have them there for at least 3 months, are rated to three. Then there's a whole period we don't know about where it gets to the drinking water plant, and then the drinking water plants are rated at three. So immediately, we've got at least the 10 straight up. And in between that, which is not rated, they do, as I mentioned, they do a lot of cleaning of the membranes, where they actually chlorinate, literally for allowing the membranes to work, and they actually have additional treatment, which is actually not even credited. So we're actually getting about 12 to 13 log reduction, measured log reduction of how they operate across
all the time. Okay, well, my argument about that is that if you look at viruses, the pre-membrane probably doesn't remove, it does a bit because bacteria get in bacteria in films, yeah. And there's some, but the size of the pores is such the viruses wouldn't be removed.
Except they're charged, so they've shown that they can actually move it through charge.
If what you say is true, then why of those seven plants that were tested, where they looked at viruses at the end of the process, did they still find in four of those seven plants viruses? Now, that actually means they didn't achieve what you said happens all the time. And the Queensland showed that two of their samples had bacteriophages in. Now, there's an argument about whether that's artifact or not, but I still find it somewhat disconcerting that the Queensland test their process that supposedly removes 10 to the 12, 10 to the 14 all the time, and oops, we got two positive results.
Okay, and the point with that, that was while they were still starting the systems up.
Okay, that was exactly...
And they were only measuring across the reverse osmosis, they weren't measuring across everything, and also... The other one bit that wasn't quite true, as soon as they detected and they found out, they went back and they actually did monitor hourly for the next 14 days.
But my point is they're not going to do that type of testing on a regular basis. They're doing that once off every now and again. So how would we know if it doesn't... And this was just at the time where the government was about to switch it in the water supply, I've got to tell you. It only came off because they had a bit more rain. They were close to switching it in. So what you're telling me is... While it wasn't perfectly right, they were going to switch it in the water supply. And B, we still don't have a mechanism of finding this on an ongoing basis, which is my point about testing.
And Professor Collignon, I'd like to be great to keep going on. Unfortunately, it's almost time for questions. But while we're getting the microphone happening, one last question for Professor Collignon. You mentioned, for me, I mean, not the last question altogether. You mentioned last resorts. Now, there could be some disagreement as to what a last resort means. I mean, I'm sure that Dr. Toews would have a completely different idea. I'm guessing, quite possibly.
The side I have is that the last resort gets down to last resort, the Brisbane dams did get down to 13%, which is, they were basically sludge puddles. Wivenhoe was, you could just about walk across the whole lot of it. That certainly is far too far for a last resort because there's a whole lot of issues into that. One of the bets if you go above 40% is you have what's called a dilution effect. And there's large amounts of water, so you've got longer residence times, as I indicated. You've got longer times that things can sit in the reservoir for natural processes to occur. So I tend to be more sort of going more about 50, 60% because of that dilution effect. But that's a personal opinion from what I've done. But I can understand that there might be a different opinion.
Well, I would take the view that I think it's unlikely Queensland will get down to that level again. The reason is because there was so much water being taken from the power stations that now, in fact, they've got a alternate source for that water. But... I actually don't know. Your last resort depends on not only the percentage but the storage. I mean, I think when you're down to your last, 1.5 years worth of water and it doesn't look like it's going to... That's actually the time where you have to start thinking about it. But that's actually not the case in most places if they have adequate storage. And even in Perth, they've got large aquifers they can use to have their water. So, if you live in the place called Windhoek in Namibia... They live in a place that's gets about 200 millimetres of rain a year. We get 600. And there basically isn't enough water. If you're going to have a town, you actually do not have any other choice there. And the problem in Southern California, they've been extracting so much water out of the aquifers and out of the rivers that if they don't actually recharge the aquifers somehow, salt water comes in and they won't have any fresh water. So there are some situations... Now, a lot of that's because of other bad practices, and I would argue the other bad practices should change rather than this. So I guess how you call it a last resort is, I guess, there's emotion and politics involved. But I think, if you look at the US Academy of Sciences, they sort of define what last resort was, and I think their definition is still quite reasonable.
Okay. Thank you very much. Look, if we could go to the questions from the audience. Thank you for your patience. And thank you to the speakers for being so fascinating that I couldn't jump in any earlier. It was just like I was wrapped in all that. But is there anyone who'd like to ask a question or come up with a point or anything with... Yep, the gentleman in the front.
Peter Wim, I'm from Sydney. We've heard a lot about all of this stuff from the media, through the media, and there's all a suggestion through the media that what we're going to do is inject... this recycled water straight into the system. Well, that's crap. That's never going to happen. How the hell do we get this recycled water from the sewerage farm to the top of the hill and then put it in the system again? It has to go through what you've been talking about, some sort of a pond where there's a good time of gestation, you might say, before it gets recycled. So there's a media beat up in here in terms of where it gets sucked into the system, where it gets put in, the dilution factor, and the time in the cycle when it all goes through. The other rubbish thing that we've been getting out of the media is this idea that we can recycle stormwater. Yeah, we can recycle stormwater if you want to flood half of Sydney. Because you can't store it. You have to pick it up, pump it up to the top of the hill again before you can start to use it again. So all this rubbish again about recycling stormwater. The infrastructure is massive to do that sort of thing. It is huge. So what we really have to do, and we've got to get rid of the flat earthers that we've got in Queensland, because they are flat earthers, and build a few more dams, because that's the only way we can go. We cannot really get recycled water at the level you need it in a large city. I'm not talking about Canberra. Canberra's not a large place. You can do a bit of recycling here, but in a large city you can't do it. You just can't get it up to the top of the hill. It's too expensive. You've got to put in more storages.
Okay. Any comments on that?
Well, the only comment I've got is, you're right, but Queensland did try that with the Traverson Dam and it got knocked right on the head, so they lost a whole lot of storage. One of the things they are looking at, though, to be fair, is a number of existing storages are being investigated whether they can increase the height of the dam. So when you've got, at the moment, Wivenhoe, I mean, when I started my research in Wivenhoe 3 years ago, we were running down a boat ramp which was about 70 metres long. Now the boat's virtually out of the water as I'm coming off the boat ramp because it's virtually full. So they're talking about spilling Wivenhoe because it's got to the level, but they have to let water out because it's above that, it becomes their flood level, which is actually not safe for the dam because of the load on the dam wall. But now they're talking about, can we raise some of these dams, not Wivenhoe, but some of these other smaller ones where the dam wall is a bit smaller and able to take that bit up higher to increase the storage capacity. So that's one thing that has been looked at in Queensland, but also elsewhere, where there are existing dams. But one of the problems is that putting new dams in is politically and publicly very difficult. And we're also running out of spaces in some places in Australia of actually more effective places to put dams. So there's other issues to do with dams rather than just let's build another dam. Yeah, but you're hypothetically correct. But there's a whole lot of other drivers about dams which negate them off straight off. So,
but they are putting in another 100 gigalitre dam at the back of the Gold Coast.
They're not actually putting new dam in. They're actually increasing Hins and Little Moraine. So that's the one I'm talking about. They're increasing the capacity of those dams.
Hang on. We need a microphone. We need a microphone just for anyone who wants to speak. Thank you.
Eastern Australia is not running out of water. Eastern Australia has buckets of water. They just don't want to put the dams in.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anything else that someone would like to... Oh, a question or a statement? Oh, man at the back, yes.
Sure. Good afternoon. My name's Ned Gaffney. I used to live in Toowoomba. I just wondered if the good doctor can comment on the fallout from the CSIRO investigation. I think there was a sum of $35 million it was postulated for the actual research, but I'm sitting here this afternoon and it seems some of it was done post-haste. What work was done before the Toowoomba experiment was put up, and what lessons learned have you got from that particular activity? Because at the moment, I don't know if you're familiar with Toowoomba, but they've got a pump in Coomby and they're using a lot of aquifers, and they've had a fair bit of rain lately, so they've sort of got out of the hole. But the problem with what the other gentleman was saying before, Toowoomba's at about 2,000 feet, and now the solution is to actually pump from Wivenhoe.
Yes.
So if you can just have a bit of a comment on that.
So you want the social or the biophysical?
Well, actually, all three of you actually touched on the points. The aquifers I know about are saline. The pumping the water, it's going to cost a fortune in energy. Yes. And running the systems that you're talking about, the problems of organisms going through, that seems a bit of an issue. If you could just give us a bit of a brief on that. Lessons learned as well.
Yeah. Okay. Lessons learned were... First off, the research being done was all international. There was virtually nothing apart from one project that I knew of being done in Western Australia, which is just completed, looking at how much chemicals actually pass across a reverse osmosis in Western Australia when they run them. That's just about to become publicly available. So it was all stuff brought from Singapore. from, and they've done a lot of research there. It's information from California and some information from small places in, like in Brussels, not Belgium, I should say, where they treat it by reverse osmosis before putting it into aquifers. That's what they use. And then, because it was interesting with the guidelines, when we did the phase one, I was involved in both the phase one and two parts of the phase two, and there were people saying, Australia will never, ever use recycled water for drinking. That was the statement that came out in the committees, and we said, okay. And then Toowoomba came in, they were saying, we've got to use it. And so that's why, that was one of the drivers to actually bring in those guidelines. And that's where research in Australia has actually gone ahead by hundreds of times in the few years between Toowoomba and now, taking research from overseas and putting in local parts. But yes, they are talking about pumping water up from Wivenhoe and even up into Lockyer, putting the purified recycled water up there. The pumping costs are just amazing, and the greenhouse, I'm just flabbergasted they're doing it, but that's what they've chosen to do because they've got these big plants which they can't switch off, they've got to do something with it. Let's give it to the farmers. So it's a bit strange for me, but move on. You got anything from the social side about it?
We actually did some focus groups with people in Toowoomba. It was really fascinating. So we got people in who had voted for or against the introduction of the recycled water scheme. And one of the things that really interested me, and I really can't, you know, comment on the kind of, you know, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, just on what people told us, was that the supporters and opponents paid attention to the same sort of information but just had different interpretations. So people who were supporters and who voted in favour at the time were really, really worried about water security issues. And you know, the dam levels were very low and they've gotten lower since, maybe not quite now. Whereas opponents were kind of, well, you know, we'll find water somewhere. And in fact, a vote, my understanding from was that to vote no was not to vote against recycled water, but was to vote against the idea of not exploring other options. That was one of the ways in which the kind of referendum was constructed. So it was, you know, I think that that people had the same sorts of, you know, they were exposed to the same sorts of information, but just had different ways of, different kind of priorities and beliefs about that information that led them to different decisions.
Yeah, at the time of the election, because initially it wasn't going to be an election, it was going to be a fait accompli.
Yeah.
But, well, the Commonwealth Government placed the...
Because they were providing a lot of the funding, and so they decided
they said
to,
it would go ahead,
referendum.
But
yeah.
They needed a referendum.
But I think one of the things I think is interesting about that is, I mean, I actually don't know when you call the last resort and you've got no other choices, but I would have thought if you looked at Toowoomba at the time, you'd say, well, it's looking pretty bleak, you know, it's another 3 or 4 years of drought. But the reality is they didn't run out of water, so I don't actually know where they got it from. So, you know, irrespective of what's one belief on this, is that they didn't actually get to the situation where they ran out of water but had to do that. Now, the only other thing with the Australian guidelines, that I think they're good that they've come out, because for the first time they said, if you're going to do this, these are the things you have to do. I think it's interesting how the word last resort has been taken out of that, but that aside. But what it does strike me when I've gone through and spoken to others, you need a certain amount of money and expertise if you're going to do this. Now, I actually think that's interesting with Goulburn, which is just up the road from here. I don't see there's any way that Goulburn could recycle water from sewage into their drinking water. They just do not have the expertise, resources and population to be able to do that. I can't actually see how you can do this unless you've got at least 100,000 or 200,000 people to justify the expenses. So I think small towns thinking about this, I think, is nuts. And what I do think, however, this technology, if you're dependent on a river that may or may not be polluted, where you should take this technology is put it at the front end when you're sucking it out of the river, so what you get is safer, because it's safer than what you've got. So I think there is a place for this technology, but it ought to be at the front end, not the back end, so to speak. And the other thing, the issue about all our sewage gets drunk downstream, it takes, I can't remember how many days, 180 days, I think, to get from here down to Adelaide. I can't. The natural environment between ultraviolet light, dilution and a whole lot of things knocks off a lot of bugs, there's competition. There is not many people who use our water downstream. Wagga, for instance, takes their water out of an aquifer. Most of the water that goes downstream is used for agriculture, except for a couple of small towns. And my view is if those small towns, the water hasn't improved enough by plastic, we need to improve their water by giving them something like reverse osmosis when they suck it out of the river, so that they have... So Yass, for instance... has its own dam. It's not allowed to use water from the Burrinjuck. You know, so there are not many people immediately downstream that use our water. And I might say I'm under the impression that the quality of Molonglo is such that we've got still fairly pretty good world-class treatment of that before it gets put into the environment. So, and but it probably could be a bit better.
Okay, we're about to run over time here, but there should be time for at least one more question. Lady of the front.
Kerry Croydon. I'd just like to highlight human health risks, and as I age I become more risk-averse and am at this time on Professor Colin Nong's side, I think. But a big theme of dietitians is that, we must drink more water. You know, our aim should be that we drink 2 litres a day. As we age during these dangerous heat waves, you know, old people tend to die, and young children as well are at great risk, and they are urged during our heat waves to drink, drink, drink. And I just wonder, because, we are an Australia-wide economy and being risk-averse, if I choose and can afford to pay, perhaps, for the purest water that is available to me, how does one protect oneself from imported overseas products as well as Australian products? And it just indicates, perhaps, that there should be some sort of oversight, you know, and Australia-wide standards, you know, for all these installations and infrastructure measures. And one sees, perhaps, that there should be a range of them so that if, you know, after the longitudinal studies are done, one particular methodology proves to be inadequate or not fail-safe, then you have other things to turn to. But at the end of the day, it just seems that there should be a strong Commonwealth role in this scenario, so that for the individual human, you know, you can consume what is available to you in your society and have access to, you know, a range of perhaps more expensive but safer, in quotes, fluids to consume.
But I think it's a whole range of issues, not just water. And it, to me, one other issue I've had, a real issue, is antibiotic-resistant bacteria in foods. And I don't think we pay enough, particularly with imported products, that we should have the same standards as Australia, and there need to be good testing and standards done. And I think there's a lot more we can do to have standardisation.
I agree wholly as well. Having seen and been involved in the new Australian guidelines, it was all a mishmash beforehand. And the one thing that the guidelines has had a definite given measurable benefit of is all the state governments are now going to using these guidelines as a way of improving and ensuring the quality of the water. So all Australian waters are actually better, more carefully controlled than they were before, and more standardised. So if you go to anywhere in Australia, it's a bit different because different waters from different places have different inputs, so they have to use slightly different areas, but at least they're now running to a scheme where you can say that the water quality is verified by a national standard, and all state governments have now signed in on both the drinking water and the recycling guidelines for whatever it's used. My only other comment is that I'm actually married to a dietitian who tells me I need to drink much more water, but she also is very much in favour of eating more chocolate.
Excellent. That's just the sort of dietitian I need. Dr. Fielding, do you have any comment on that last point?
I mean, the only thing that struck me is that the end of the comment was about the idea of increased costs of water. And, of course, increasing the cost of an essential of life has impacts on usually the most vulnerable people in society. So we do have to be careful about the idea that we're going to suddenly somehow, you know, make... You know, there is a kind of cost-benefit analysis that we need to do, surely, as a society, so that we have something we think is good quality, but we don't kind of push the boundaries so much that it becomes incredibly expensive and negatively impacts on those vulnerable groups.
Well, can I just say I agree with that? Mm-hmm. That's a friend of mine who's a microbiologist in Brisbane was getting stuck into me because I was arguing against this. And his comment was, oh, look, you know, this all happens all the time. And he says, And when they bring it in, I'm going to drink bottled water, so it won't matter. Now, what I thought was interesting about that is, A, I think we have too much bottled water. What we need is the water available to be safe for everybody, because otherwise it actually means the most vulnerable are the ones who don't get the safest water. And I think the other problem with bottled water, it often doesn't have fluoride and a whole lot of other things in it that we need to protect people's teeth.
But, and also the phthalates come out of this, which is a chemical which is far worse than some of the other chemicals we've got in our drinking water at the moment. So
I think it's essential that what comes out of the tap is as safe as it can be.
Okay.
At a good price.
Yeah. It's from China. I would really worry about water from China.
I've been in China many times. I wouldn't be touching anything. Unless you're in China. Put it this way. If you're in China and you have a choice between the tap and the bottled water, take the bottled water. But if you're somewhere else and you have a choice between Chinese water and somewhere else...
My view in China is you take the tap water, you boil it yourself and drink it.
Well, the boiling doesn't take out some of the chemicals
I realise.
Okay, well, look, I mean, we should stop it here, partly because it's we're over time, and partly because Dr. Tozzi and Professor Collignon are sort of roughly in agreement over something. And so it seems like it's nice to end on a happy ending. Now, those who want to hang around, I can't speak for all of the speakers, but I know that they're there's talk about them, at least one or two of them sticking around for a little while if you'd like to ask a few more quick questions. But in the meantime, one last round of applause for Dr. Simon Tozzi, Dr. Kelly Fielding and Professor Peter Collignon.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.